So you're a fan of Atlanta United.
And you just can't possibly understand how we finished sixth last year.
Or maybe you just don't get how we conceded 53 goals and you want to know if it's going to happen again.
Was it Parata and Miles Robinson?
Nope. Gone.
Sedic and Josetu?
Nope. Gone.
How about Miguel Berry?
Or maybe it was Pineda's tactics.
Double pivot, airplanes, pinching in. Absolutely shambolic.
I'm Mikey Dobbs.
I'm David Katz.
I'm Carmen Butler.
And we're going to talk about it all, because this is the ATL on Fire podcast show.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back to another episode of ATL on Fire, the podcast where we talk all things Atlanta United Football Club and all things soccer. And as always, joined by Dave and Carmen, but also joined by Dave and Carmen for our 100th podcast.
Woo! Can't be. It literally can't be.
Yeah. And, we are at a brewery, Wild Heaven, our sponsor, who is nice enough to allow us to have a beautiful stage. A little overcast here in Avondale Estates and in the Atlanta area.
It's legit, people. Overcast. We got planes. We got trains coming by. Yeah. Come on.
And the sun might be peeking out here. It's overcast, but
maybe
it's warm. It's maybe. Almost 70 degrees. A good day to celebrate. We, instead of drinking wine, we're drinking some lovely beer.
Well, I have to say, so we're at the brewery, so of course we're drinking beer. But, Carmen, what are you drinking?
I am actually drinking some Wolf Mountain wine at the brewery in a Wild Heaven cup. So I got it all covered.
But, so this is here is proof that you can do it all.
You
here.
Can do it all.
And so there is a wine and arts festival walk happening, I think, on the weekend of May 11th. So another great chance to get down here to Avondale Estates, enjoy some beer, enjoy some wine for the wine festival. There's some art that's going to be happening. In fact, there's a big art gallery, I think, happening in the parking lot right now. So.
And they have an anniversary coming up, too, right? The Wild Heaven Brewery.
I don't know.
Been open.
Keep me honest.
Yeah.
All right.
I think it's been, was it 10 years? We'll have to find out. Okay. I think the brewery's been here. They have a...
At least, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. We got a sign behind us. You probably read it on the YouTube. So,
11th anniversary weekend celebration. Yeah. Okay, cool.
What else is happening? So 100 podcasts is our 6 year, Dave. Can you believe it? Congratulations to all of us.
Cheers,
Carmen,
guys.
Dave. Salud.
Salud.
Cheers, everybody. And thanks to you podcast listeners for being out there. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's what we're here for.
Yeah, and thanks to Hayden here and everyone who's helped kind of get us set up here. They are also working on a new location in Toco Hills, which is going to be awesome.
Very excited for that.
What's better than
with Fox Brothers again, barbecue? I mean, does that get any better than that, people?
Not really.
No, that's a collaboration.
And Hayden sent me a couple photos. I got to show you guys both after the podcast. Here comes the train, the MARTA train in the background.
Yep.
They've even got a fire thing, so maybe we can sneak behind that one of these times doing the podcast at the new location. Maybe a late summer opening. I don't know. I'm not trying to steal thunder from Wild Heaven.
Yeah, we don't want to burst their thunder, but we heard by this fall they'll be open.
Yeah, that would be awesome.
That's exciting.
Really exciting.
Pending permits and all that, I'm sure. So, So we've got one game to review. Dave, you and I were at it live, the Cincinnati-Atlanta home game where we unfortunately lost after going
debacle,
a goal up.
The debacle that was.
And we also
We have a lead in that game?
We did.
For like half a second.
Oh.
For a quick second. And then there's a game tonight on the road against Chicago Fire, which we have yet to win on the road, and we rarely win on the road. So we'll talk about our predictions and what we think should happen there.
Correct.
Let's talk a little bit about where we are. We're a quarter through the season. We're seventh place in the East. Oof. A win in Chicago would bump us up quite a bit. So... Not
to
the
be
worst,
fair to us, over the first, third of the season, whatever it is, we've had a tough schedule. We have played Columbus. We have played Philadelphia. We have played Cincinnati. Those are clearly three of the major contenders already.
Right.
So, there might be some sunnier days ahead of us, but still not great.
Carmen, what else should we talk about on this that is not on the list here? So,
I have no idea.
Recap Cincinnati, talk a little Chicago, talk about, you know, just basically what we think of the team so far. I mean, I think a quarter in is a decent
amount.
And we'll
have to relive, you know, what the podcast has been so far, you know?
Yeah.
Okay. But let's start with the Cincy game.
Okay. Sounds good.
Well, hold on. Let's talk. I like the idea of starting with the evolution of the podcast.
Okay.
This is
our sixth year. You know, I think particularly the last 2 years, I'm proud of the fact that we've kind of gone a little more analytical, and I think that suits Dave particularly well, who is a student of the game. Mm-hmm. You know, thanks to Dave, right? We have some actual brains behind breaking down.
As if this is not like
but honestly, it is
soccer trust here.
It is fun to learn kind of the, you know, the chess part of the game that, mm-hmm. you know, as a player, you and I, Carmen, maybe we're not as attuned to.
Yeah, and Katz would do this to me at youth soccer games. Okay. So I kind of expected it. And
she
had to listen. So this has been good.
So, yeah, I've started to appreciate it more, even though Dave and I have had many of arguments behind a beer.
That's how it all started, an argument in a bar.
Yeah. That's how the whole podcast started. So really? a little history there. Yeah, Dave and I were at the Tin Roof there on North Druid Hills. And
yep.
You know, as somebody does marketing, you know, I really wanted to understand how YouTube and podcast distributions worked. And we started talking like, hey, you know, we can talk soccer nonstop.
So Mikey Dobbs said he wanted to start a podcast to learn about all these things. And he was like, he had some ideas and different things. And then, you know, we had that conversation. We moved on. We started arguing as we normally did about soccer. And I stopped him and I said, you know, you could make the podcast about soccer. And he was like, yeah, duh.
Perfect. So, yeah, if the listeners out there know why I am not as insightful as Dave, that's the history there. But thank you for partnering with me on this, both of you, and entering our sixth year.
I have to say, it's been a pleasure working with both of you. I mean, for those of you who are really in the history of the podcast will know that Carmen was our fourth guest.
That's yes. right.
Right?
That's
so
right.
In the beginning, you know, we used to have, you know, a guest, and we would bring on some of our friends who were knowledgeable about soccer just to talk about their perspective of the club and mm-hmm. their experience and how they
and
got
this
tickets.
This was off the heels of a 2018 championship, so everybody right. was super high on
right.
Atlanta United.
Mm-hmm. So I said, oh, we got to have Carmen on in particular because not only is she very knowledgeable about soccer, but she was on the board of Soccer in the Street, so I thought that was something we really wanted to hear about. Then Carmen one day texted me and said, you know, y'all should have a producer. And I said, yeah, you.
I was not ready for that because I was a loyal listener every time it came. Oh, like, I listen and I was like, you know, one thing that would help is if y'all didn't have to worry about the computers, y'all should find somebody.
And thank you so much.
Should not have been me.
I am not. Like, there's no technology other than the microphone near me right now, which is where it should be.
So this has been an awesome partnership with y'all.
Yes. A lot of fun. Tons of fun.
Cool.
So,
so that's how we started. We used to have guests like every week, just friends. And then we evolved a little bit. We've had a couple of more high profile guests. We've had Greg Garza. We've had Jason Longshore. Right. But you know, more or less we've really, as we've gotten into it more, we really, really like to talk about the games and what's going on with the team and,
yeah, and we're not as close to the inner workings of Atlanta United as some of the other, you know, I guess more, you know, freely committed podcasters out there like Scarves and Stripes or, you know, folks that have a little more access via media to what's happening behind the club. So everything we are talking about is just from our knowledge of soccer and our observations of what we're seeing on the field. You know, we do a lot of rewatching of the games, and so I think a lot of the tactical board information that Dave breaks down is hopefully useful. Would love some continued feedback on ways we can evolve the show. But let's get into it. So,
all right, that's what we do.
Let's recap the Cincinnati game where, again, it was a disappointment. After into the second half, we get a goal, but then let two more in by Cincinnati. And instead of getting 6 points at home, two weekends in a row, we only get, what, 1 point?
Got the one.
Just one.
And so now tonight at 8:30 Eastern Standard Time, we play Chicago Fire. Haven't won on the road. Should win.
We've won, what, 5 games in the last 2 years on the road under Pineda? I mean, it's been woeful.
Okay. So where do you want to go? Do you want to go Cincinnati recap?
Yeah, let's talk about Cincinnati. I mean, first of all, I'll say it again. Sleaze, absolutely master class.
Yeah,
master class. Right? And what was interesting, I actually found, so there's been a lot of critique about these games and the tactics, you know, and should Pineda change this and that up? And one thing I'll have to say is I feel like our center midfield with Muyumba and Sleaze really working together. I think our center midfield, while maybe not perfect, I've really argued very strongly that they should be front and back, Muyumba and Sleaze, and that Sleaze should really be left and right and dictating it. But I don't think that's the problem anymore. I think we have fixed that, maybe not with the tactics, but we fixed that with the players. Like Sleaze and Muyumba as a partnership.
Right.
We had no defense in the midfield last year. When we went to Columbus and got absolutely killed, right, we had no defense in the midfield, right? We started those games, right, with Fortune, right, and we started it with Josetu as our defensive midfielder. There was no defending in the middle. And there were times where it was just like parting of the seas.
Yeah.
Right. Mm-hmm. But that is not true anymore. Anybody who's watching the games this year has to say, whether it's tactics, I don't think it really is. I think it's more the players. But the Muyumba Sleaze partnership, and really, you got to say it's Sleaze because we had Muyumba last year, is really solidified the middle. We suddenly have it marked up in the middle.
Yep. It's fantastic.
Yeah. And I don't want to undercut Muyumba, too. He's been terrific as well. He's a major asset, I think, to the midfield compared to what we had last year.
Yeah. And in this game, what was interesting is because, as we pointed out on the last podcast, so Muyumba and Sleaze were really, like, parallel to one another, and they were going up in the field sort of like, you know, almost like the bubble hockey together, you know.
Love that game.
But here's the thing, right? So in this game, what I noticed is actually that was not the case, right? Sleaze had a much more... free roll. He was going much more left and right.
Everywhere.
He was everywhere. Yeah. But in the game before, he was really right of a double pivot.
Right.
Right. That was not true. And I was wondering, is that Pineda has made an adjustment and he sees it like I do, which is Sleaze should have that role? I kind of am guessing no. I think that the answer is when you look against Cincinnati, you have got to stop, you know, Lucho.
Lucho,
right, Acosta. I mean, he's everything, Acosta, right? So I felt like that was all designed, that Sleaze had a sort of free roll, and Muyumba was trying to find Acosta all the time. Yeah. What did you think?
Well, yeah, you and I were sitting next to each other in the game, and you definitely saw that trying to be part of the tactics and Muyumba being assigned to, you know, smothering Acosta.
Yeah.
I think certainly my recollection, the first half that was successful.
Yes.
And then something happened in the second half, which Muyumba wasn't happened. In the game doing that. It was fortunate.
I wrote that, I mean, Carmen, you'll appreciate this.
Okay.
In the first half, at halftime, I wrote my notes. Overall, I think this is the most organized I have ever seen Atlanta United under Pineda.
Look at here, the optimism. I love it.
Well, I mean, it really was.
It looked great.
A game where, you know, both teams had some chances, particularly in the first half.
Yeah.
You know, I think, you know, Cincinnati even hit our post once or twice.
Yeah. So yeah. Their best chance. So the best chance of the half for us was when we had the counterattack. Mosquera was breaking into the front. He tried to chip a cheeky kind of cross above it, and he really mishit it. But then the defender made it even worse. He tried to head it out, and he ended up heading it right to Saba's
feet. Right to Saba's feet.
And Saba standing there right by the goal.
Like from 3 yards
away.
And
I think, you know, at first, all he had to do was tap it in. And I think he thought, okay, that's easy. And because of that, he was so caught off guard because it was such a bad header to him.
It was the 11th minute of the game, and, yeah, I think Saba was probably all of – 4 feet in front of the left post.
He just
post.
Had to kick it in. And he took an extra second. And by the time he took an extra second, the goalkeeper reacted very quickly to come over. Mm-hmm. And then I thought he didn't do a good job. He kind of just shot it like it was an open goal, and the goalkeeper made a pretty easy save. By the time he hesitated, he had to roof it.
Yeah.
Right? Mm-hmm. But I think he was just so shocked that the ball fell to him. It was just such a terrible clearance. You know?
Yeah. But at the beginning of that, Amada, I don't know if you remember – in that, the buildup, again, people are like, oh, Amada's not in that. No, he plays a dagger pass right up the center. I don't know if you recall. That's how that whole play got set up.
You're right.
It was Amada was like about half midway, and he plays this beautiful weighted ball right through the middle where I think it ends up wide to Mascara. He crosses it over. It bumbles back over, and Saba's standing there and just shocked and can't finish it.
And I have to say the one twice in this game, so the one that you were talking about that we gave up that went hit the post behind Guzan, which was a little bit fortunate, right?
Yep.
So that was a counterattack. Wiley and Abram were both up the field, so it must have started off of like a corner or something like this. But in any case, it was a 3v3 rush against Lennon, Cobb, and Sleaze, who was back. And one of the things you saw from Sleaze on this play, and I'll talk about it in the second half when we gave up the goal, what Sleaze did is, first of all, he reacted first, which is not uncommon for him. He's amazing. And then second, he went the most open guy was Wiley's guy on the outside.
Yeah.
He just went right there. And this is what you should do as a defensive midfielder, right? When you're coming back, the two center backs are looking forward. They can see everything. Your job is just to go find the most open guy and let them read the game. They're looking up the field. Mm, right. If you try to go chase it behind, then they don't know, are you going to catch him? Or, and they should stay to the open guy, or you're maybe never going to catch him, and they stay over here.
They've got the better geometry on the situation.
So what he did was absolutely perfect as he went, and he said, I'm clearly going to the open guy, and you take care of everything else, the rest. So he wasn't involved in that play in the end, in neither of the plays that we're going to talk about he was involved with, but it was so good. And I thought Muyumba was kind of caught up. He was slow to react and was trailing badly. And then the other thing I'll say about that play is Guzan was slow getting down. I mean, you know, I was kind of thinking initially that, oh, he must have had it covered. He did not have that covered at all. That was inside the post. It's a goal.
Yeah.
Is this the header you're talking about?
No, the one that he hit below the post.
Oh, yeah.
And went behind him.
Because I was thinking at first, I was like, oh, he had it covered. That's why, you know, it hit the post. Yeah. He had it covered. But when I look back, he definitely did not.
Because there was another one. There was a 1-2 in the 8th minute. Where Cincinnati almost scores like 8 minutes in, where there's actually a pretty nice little 1-2 combination in the corner. Somebody plays a nice little cross near post. I don't know who from Cincinnati gets up and wins the header against Abram or whomever our center back was, and it hits the far post again.
Yes, except for that was 8 minutes into the second half. Where that play was.
No, this is...
Yeah, second half. So Hernandez was marking him. He didn't come off until half, right? And actually, on that play, it was chipped across. And Hernandez, at first I thought Hernandez didn't do a good job because he got beat to the ball, right? But the thing about it, when you go back and look at the clip, right, Hernandez actually got pretty close. Like, he did just enough to put him off. Yeah. And because of that, he hit a really weak header. Now, it was towards the far post. It kind of bounced weakly, hit off the post, and came out. Should have been a goal.
Yeah, I'm mixing in my notes. You're right.
Yeah.
So
yeah, that was second half.
Yeah.
But I will say if we continue in the first half, there was like a moment where they were attacking us down the left. Lennon was there, right? And he had all day to go mark the guy, and he stayed inside in his crazy pinched in moment, right? Mm-hmm. And because of that, right? Saba ran 40 yards back. He sprinted all the way back to try to get back and to cover that guy. And Lennon just watched him the whole time. He could have gone out and addressed that. He was covering nobody. But that, it proves to you, and we'll get to the moment in the second half where it was even more shambolic, it proves to you the tactics that he is not responsible for that. Because otherwise, why would you watch as your attacking outside midfielder runs 40 yards back to cover that guy? Now, Saba made it back and covered the guy, but I was like, really? Is that the tactic that, you know, because Wiley Lennon was like 10 yards from him. Yeah. He could have just gone and addressed it, but he was like,
I know exactly the player time. We were overloaded. They were a man up, but I felt like Lennon was way too far central for, you know, had Cincinnati actually played a decent ball in that situation, it would have been a very easy goal.
I have to say, overall in the first half, just to wrap up the first half with a bow, I thought Cincinnati was good tactically. I thought we were good tactically. I thought the players were good. And maybe you're like, you should hit me over the head for this, Mikey Dobbs and Carmen. But I thought that was the closest I had seen MLS come to European football.
Ooh.
It was a decent tactic.
Really?
It was a decent matchup. Well played
tactically. The players were good. It was 0-0 at half. It was a little bit, you know, cagey and tactical, but.
Okay, I
would say
that.
95% of the people out there are going to disagree with us. Yeah. But based on like how many moments like Schlees was stepping up and winning balls. And yeah, Cincinnati had their moments too, but it was very back and forth and it could have gone either way.
Mm-hmm.
But I felt like both teams were playing, you know, good soccer. It was entertaining.
Okay.
Yeah, I agree.
For sure.
So one thing I want to bring up in the first half, Dave, is you know, we talked about the new rules.
And they really came in the second half, but go ahead.
So, the injuries. So, yeah, I think there was a moment that, so we'll talk about that in the second half, actually. Okay. Let's do that.
Yeah, because there was an injury. I mean, while you brought it up, we'll bring it up. We'll just go to it right now. So there was an injury pretty late in the game, and it was Miles Robinson and Miazga.
Oh, that's right.
Miazga gets hit in the head, and Robinson gets hit with just a flailing arm, right? Miazga looks at Robinson, right? And because of the new rule, he pops right back up and he's like, I am not going off because the two of us, because this is something we didn't discuss last time we discussed the new rule. So for those of you out there who don't know the rule is now if you're down for 15 seconds, you have to stay off the field for 2 minutes. And Miazga and Robinson are their two center backs.
Yep.
And they did not want both of them going off for 2 minutes together. Yeah. So Miazga, and they looked at each other like, one of us should stay down
Miazga
and one of us should get up.
Miazga popped up.
And he popped
immediately.
Right back up.
Immediately,
so
yep.
So far you're winning the bet because it did make a difference in that moment. But I would say that's a technicality.
I agree. I think it's not going to work.
Interesting.
Okay.
I've already jumped to my king. I'm going to jump.
Let's do it.
Remember
how
I said, like, will I admit I'm wrong?
Yeah.
Do it.
I can tell.
You can't be wrong yet. It's only been one game.
It's only been one game, and I'm already predicting it's going to be a disaster. Here's why. Right. Because it's just going to add a layer of confusion, particularly when there's legitimate things that are happening out there. Like, there's a head injury. There's somebody like that Nick guy who actually he ended up subbing off in the first half where there
Cobb.
Two Cincinnati players went down.
Yeah.
It was Miles and somebody else. They actually got hurt, and then in fact Cincinnati subbed one of their players off because he was in fact injured.
Yep.
And then Miles, because he waited 15 seconds,
I'm just gonna interrupt you for 1 second. He was both injured and he was playing terribly. And I think the coach Noonan was like, yeah, you're injured.
Yeah.
Like, come on.
But I think that's an interesting example where things can be compounding, where I don't know that they've thought through all the different scenarios of three players going down. Like, do all three players have to go off for 2 minutes? Like, what is it?
Well, I have to say. And
or is it just they have to pick one?
Here's the really interesting thing, right? So in that case, Miazga popped right up. Robinson stayed down. Robinson went off the field. And he came right back on the field. He didn't wait the 2 minutes.
No, he did wait the 2 minutes.
No, he didn't wait the 2 minutes, did he?
Yeah, he did. I watched the replay. He did wait the 2 minutes.
Which one, Miles?
On the first half, he waited.
Oh, yeah, he waited the 2 minutes.
He waited the two
he
minutes.
Waited the two.
Okay. So we got that wrong.
I thought he came back on. I thought it was maybe because of Hedger. I was like, why did he come back on?
I think that may have been a second half thing.
Yeah, it was second half.
But this was the first half when Miles waited 2 minutes.
Yes, he did wait 2 minutes in the first half. But I'm talking about in the second
half.
And on this double one,
he didn't wait.
He did not, right?
Okay,
because he pretended like it was a head injury.
Head injury.
So that's what I was
wondering. And evidently he pretended like it was a head injury. I'm talking about the first half, right?
Okay.
What I also don't understand, and maybe somebody can comment on the YouTube comments or whatever, is the situation where, like, let's say that happens and there's a goalkeeper goes down. And it's legit, right? Like, the goalkeeper can't be out
for 2 minutes. The goalkeeper
is
excluded from that rule.
Oh, you read up on this.
Are they? Oh, okay. Really?
The goalkeeper, I think,
is wondering about
excluded
that.
From that rule because obviously that would be shambolic.
That would be shambolic. Okay. I like it.
Right. I also think the
just to clarify for you those out there, right? So there were two times. So Miles Robinson got hurt twice in the game. The first half, he did stay off the 2 minutes, and they literally counted that down and held him off until then he was winning. And that late in the second half, when both him and Miazga went down and Miazga popped right back up, Robinson did go off to the side. They brought on the trainer, whatever, and then he went right back in the game. And I was like, "What's the 2 minutes?" And the answer was because he was pretending that it was a head injury. He did get poked in the head, but it was not a head injury.
But that's where it's going to be really creaky, and this is where I'm like, I don't think this is going. I think it's going to be another
too
lever.
Subjective.
Too subjective.
Mm-hmm.
And because concussion protocol is so important,
yep.
The players are going to just move that into that. You know how they put their hands to the face?
We've already.
Now they're just going to put their hands to their head.
I mean, you're already seeing that little bit. Because they have to stop the play immediately for a head injury. So some people are like grabbing their head. Yeah. And, you know, so.
I think it's going to be.
I got hit in the ankle and it's my head. All right. So now halftime, right? I thought Cobb got hurt. It turned out he had a migraine.
Right.
That's really? A weird thing. Who gets a migraine in the middle of the game while you're playing?
Affecting his vision.
I mean, I'm sure it happens.
Anyway, so he went off with a migraine, and Hernandez comes in at center back. What did you think of Hernandez in the second half at center back, Mikey Dobbs?
I tried to watch most of the second half right before you came this morning on replay.
For a second time, people.
Y'all were both there.
But I wasn't cued into Hernandez. So tell me what you thought, Dave, because
I thought he was not good in the center back.
I think that seems to be the sentiment
not
online.
Not really his role.
He was not.
Not his role. Oh. Was not not doing well.
Yeah. I mean, as we'll talk about in a second, on the on one of the goal that the shambolic goal that we gave off of our offensive corner, he was really slow in reacting. He was slow in chasing back. It wasn't great.
Why do we continue to play zone defense on these corner kicks? I think that's more of the issue than anything.
Well, that's a different story. This time I'm talking about when we had an offensive
corner. We had a
corner kick.
Almada did that
Almada
short.
Gave it away. Short corner. Okay,
That was awful.
That was awful.
Yes. So first, let's just start with the good.
I like good. Right? I like it.
58th minute, Almada offensively gets a ball, makes a perfect first touch, and then just snaps a shot from outside the 18 and bends it right in the far corner. Yeah. I mean, that was pure class.
Yeah, beautiful. I think Mascara comes down the left side, gets it. He drops it off to Wiley, I believe, who then drops it off to Almada, who takes that beautiful touch and then just bends it far post. And that's just pure Almada at his best.
Now, one of the things that's interesting is that right after the goal, we sub in Gigi for Rios, we sub in Fortune for Muyumba, and Silva for Mascara.
Yeah.
Okay? Now, here's the thing. I thought, what? You take the lead and those are the subs? But when I was looking back on the highlights.
So those subs are already happening?
They were already there.
Before
already
the goal happened.
That
there.
Is exactly
it's
right.
My last note here, Dave.
Yep,
look at this.
Already there.
That is literally, I said. Triple substitution, da 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 da. I said, doesn't make any. I said, again, this was planned before Almada scores the goal, and he doesn't make any adaptation.
Yeah, right. Can you pull? You could pull them back,
yeah,
right?
That's my note. It's my last
until
note.
They go on the field. There's right. There's no obligation to do it. You can pull the guy
right.
back.
Yeah,
but scared, not forward thinking. I don't know.
Yeah. You give him a little bit of sympathy because it was already planned, but still, I would have been like, whoa.
Yeah,
whoa,
come on, let me rethink this.
Well, particularly after you let the Philadelphia game slip away into a draw.
Yes.
Ooh, you make good points, Mikey Dobbs.
Yeah. Hmm. And he had to have thought about that and said, oh, well, the first goal was a mistake. Mascara makes a terrible, like, well, no, you make your own luck.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. You make your own luck, Pineda, at some point.
Yeah, yeah.
And I think that's why... In that situation, you're like, no, okay, we can barely even protect. Cincinnati is a great team. Let's protect the one goal lead we just created.
Mm-hmm.
Let's put in Dax McCarty or somebody. I don't know. Like, let's change it up.
Right. But,
all right. So then sort of shortly thereafter, you know, foreshadowing. Right. There's an offensive corner, right? Almada plays it short. And I don't know. I guess Lennon wasn't really like he was. They weren't on the same page. He was trying to play Lennon. For a whipped in cross, and Lennon didn't react to it, and he played it kind of soft. And so, anyway, Lennon never got to it. The first guy who got to it was Lucho, right? They start the counter, okay? So now Pineda said that they had worked on something in practice, but that was not the moment to try it. Yeah. How do you feel about that?
Well, I don't know. I was curious on this, right? So if you're the coach, are there hand signals at this level for what is about to happen for Almada? Can you say scrap the special play, or is this all on Almada to make that decision himself on is it the right moment to play the
you
back
can do
pass?
Both. I've seen both. You know, that the
so
coach will
to me, it's more about even if that play goes wrong, Dave, you shouldn't be in that vulnerable of this.
That's position. What it is. That's exactly
total
what it
excuse.
Is.
Yeah. Yep.
Total excuse.
Yeah. Total excuse. Right, because precisely. There's really no problem. You're up 1-0 if you have a really good corner kick play. There's why wouldn't you go with a corner kick play, right?
Mm-hmm.
The problem, the two problems become. So first of all, whatever happened, right, they weren't on the same page. So for whatever you practiced, Almada and Lennon have to be on the same page. You can't have one guy doing it and the other guy be like, oh, I'm not really sure. Right.
So two things there. Lennon wasn't on the same page with Almada, obviously. I would say just looking at it, Almada didn't – I mean, he had they been on the same page, maybe Lennon is totally on his horse there and he comes up and just smashes either a shot or a cross. But it definitely was not – it was a little short.
It was short.
Oh, it was a little short. Weakly played, and it was short.
I feel like it wasn't the greatest ball by Ahmad.
That is accurate.
It was a poor ball.
So then you got Lennon who tried – you know, should have been there. And then all of a sudden, you see Sleaze bomb back. Everything's actually pretty well covered.
Now, Sleaze was amazing. So he reacts first,
of course. He reacts first.
And he goes right to the far side where Wiley is, and he takes the guy the entire time. Now, he doesn't get involved in the play at all. Right, but he took away that option and gave. So Wiley was the guy.
Everything is covered except Lennon's now going to actually defend. Right.
Well, you can say what you're going to say, but so what I would say is that so first of all they play it out right. So Lucho has the ball. Actually, it wasn't Lucho who picked off the ball. It was somebody else and played it to Lucho. So Lucho's out wide, Acosta. And Wiley is in the middle. He's the only guy back, which is a little weird. But anyway, so I don't really – it was a long way to go for Wiley to get to Acosta. Now, you might have said, look, if they're keeping one, maybe you keep somebody close to there, take away that option. But anyway, I don't really blame him for that. I don't blame Wiley once he was there. He had no chance to kind of get there. He kind of tried to slow him down by coming out slowly. But anyway, Wiley doesn't get beat either. Lucho just plays it right behind him. And what happens is there's a run from the middle. It's Lennon who reacts by going forward and then tries to sprint back. Yeah. And it's a 60-yard sprint to see who can get to our box first.
And Lennon doesn't
Lennon never catches him.
Never catches him.
So if you're going to blame Lennon, you got to say you got to blame him for not being fast enough. But he never gets beat.
I 100% agree, but he's not fast enough. And he's not fast enough for two reasons, because he didn't read Almada's short corner.
He was kind of a no-man's land for half a second.
He was a no-man's land for half a second.
And then had to react.
Yeah. And then that half a yard that he lost is why we – I mean, he just got out-motored.
Yeah.
And I agree. Everybody else kind of covered where they should have and were like, okay, Lennon, please catch up. And at some point, what do you take the yellow card there? Do you just kick him?
Yeah.
Professional foul?
If you have a chance. I don't.
You have a chance.
Yeah.
You never.
Yeah. Absolutely.
I don't know. I got to go back to
the last man back. You can't do that. Yeah. But
He wasn't the last man back, though, because I remember Schlees and Wiley, like, other people are back. It's just that side of Lennon just got smoked.
I don't think he could have fouled him. But
Maybe not, but.
Okay. Anyway, so I would have said great counter, and really the big mistake there was the really horrible corner.
Yeah.
But I, you know, and not only that, and as you point out, not having the players back to be able to react to it, because I don't really think anybody really made a mistake. Nobody got dribbled by.
Agreed.
Nobody got whatever.
Agreed.
Yeah.
All right. So it's 1-1 now,
and that might get us right to the point
that
where
that took the gas out of the crowd too, big time.
So
I'm sure it did. I wasn't there, but I'm sure
it was like
we had just scored. Like
here
two
we go again.
So Pineda says that they are working on all these little things to avoid individual lapses, and I think this is a perfect goal to discuss that. Right? So he says, we're working on all these little things to avoid individual lapses. What else can we do? Yeah. Right? Now, what
As
do
in
you
we
think?
Can't do anything more.
Oh, look at here.
Hey, there's Dustin.
So in my opinion, and maybe I'll let you answer first. So do you think is that a proper sentiment? Like, you know, be like, look, we're still giving up lapses. What is it?
I think
it's not his fault.
It's a terrible quote as a coach.
Yeah, okay. But why? Is that the problem? Like, is it his fault that their players are making individual lapses?
Yes.
Okay.
Because everything is about lowering the odds of individual lapses based on training and philosophy that you're putting forth and just overall positioning. So at some point, which is what he is saying, is like the tide is going to turn, right? Now, I would believe that, except that Pineda's had, what, 3 years now? And so the tide's not going to turn. This is who we are.
Yeah.
And it's because of lack of preparation, training, the right little things that are not happening from the ground up.
Carmen, what do you think?
I'm usually hesitant to blame a coach for, like, individual players, like, making mistakes. Because mistakes are going to happen, lapses of judgment, et cetera. But there's just, I don't know, maybe it's because I'm listening to y'all too much, but there's something that I feel like the preparation and just the whole mindset could be better, that they're not making those same mistakes. Put them in positions where they, even if the mistakes are major, they're not going to be so blatant and obvious and lead to goals.
So I'm going to disagree with Mikey Dobbs and more agree with Carmen. So any coach, in my opinion, who thinks that the answer is to somehow get his players so focused that they never make mistakes, are kidding themselves. Players are going to make mistakes.
Yeah.
It's just impossible, right? So as a coach, you know, you shouldn't really be trying to minimize mistakes. If you got players who are making mistakes, get a new player, right?
I think we're agreeing.
But here's the thing. As a coach, your job is to get the tactics right so that when they make a mistake, it doesn't give up a goal. So now this is a perfect example. So Almada makes an individual error. He plays a horrible corner, right? But that's in their penalty area. How does that lead to a goal? It's tactics.
Exactly, and that's what I'm saying. I don't have it all in my head where everybody's positioned. Yep. But if you're like, okay, because you do want to try to play it short enough where Lennon is able to step up on it and make it really dangerous, right? So you know that as part of your training, Dave. So what does that mean in terms of who's the center back, making sure that if it does get picked off, that there's plan B in place? So there wasn't a plan B in place when that
plan B sucked.
Plan B sucked.
Because nobody ever got beat and we give up a goal, right? So that's a problem. You cannot have an offensive corner where your plan B, when the players who are back, mean that if they win the first ball out and they get a counter, there's nobody gets beat and we give up a goal. Yeah. That can't happen. And that's on the coach, right? So I would have said, look, you know, you can't just have Wiley back. There should be not just maybe Wiley back, but there probably should be someone standing on Lucho.
Yeah.
Right, to say, look, if we're going to give up a counter, they're going to try to go through Lucho. If not, make their center back or whoever wins the ball run the 90 yards, and then you can blame a player, right? If the guy starts in their own six-yard box and beats us their own goal, like, you know.
Yeah.
But if they are easily get an outlet and Lucho has all day to pick up the run, that's a problem.
Yeah.
I think that him saying that I'm constantly trying to correct the individual errors is madness. It is absolutely the essence of why he's struggling as a coach. Well, because you can't do that. It's impossible. It is absolutely impossible. And the number of fans who say, oh, if only we could just fix those players making errors, it will never happen. What you need to do is have mechanisms to correct so when there's an error, we don't give up a goal. And we need to score enough goals where that – If we do make a mistake, that is not a problem.
He's heating up.
You're on fire. And I also think you hit the right button because Pineda has also historically said the team lacks intensity. Like, you can't make some players more intense. Like, it's just like people you work with. There are some intense people you work with, and there's some laid back people.
And there's me.
Like, trying to change people's personality, like, you're not like any, like, intensity. Like, that's not something that you can coach.
Yeah.
I don't think.
No.
I don't know.
I mean, you can get players to play up, and there are coaches who never talk about intensity and things like this, and the teams play flat or whatever, and that's on a coach a little bit. You got to get your
– Yeah, you got
to
be up.
But the other thing about coaching is that there's no such thing as a team being able to play intensely all the time. I mean, Bielsa is like a perfect example of this. He gets his players to play dead, super intense or whatever for a season. Which is amazing. How he does that is amazing. But then in the second season, they just die. Right? I mean, like, it's a perfect example, right? So what you need to do as a coach is you need to have a players and a tactics where you can go out and win a lot of the games against weaker teams. Like Chicago tonight, you should be able to go on the road, beat them, even with not the most intense performance, and then save the big buildup in the intensity for the Columbus game on the road. Like, that's huge.
So let's wrap up this Cincinnati game. So
yes, it's 1-1. I want to talk about the second goal, because I think this epitomizes everything that is Atlanta United right now under Pineda.
All right, let's hit the rewind. What happened, Dave?
Okay. So they have the ball down the left side. They're over by the touchline. They're in our half. Sorry for those. We don't have the highlights right now because we're at the brewery. Right? And so amazingly, remarkably for our team, right, so Sleaze and Muyumba absolutely are all both on the ball side. They've got it all closed down. The center backs have it all closed down. So the first thing you'll notice if we go back to the clip, and I encourage you to do so individually, if you want to do it, it's 5:37 in the highlights package. You can go find it. If you stop the play on the very beginning of the play, what is so shambolic, Mikey Dobbs, and is so indicative of our problem, so they have the ball on the left. The guy has no options except they have a player out wide. Lennon is pinched in and is leaving the near side guy right on the line wide open. Why? Why?
Because Lennon is being coached to pinch in.
Yes. I mean, if there is ever an example of like, the entire, like, almost all 20 players are over in one side. They're all pinched on one side. He has nowhere to go with the ball except for all the way back to his center back, which is what he does. Or to go wide open to the 10 yards in front. Now, he doesn't take that because he's not really going anywhere. But why? Why? So anyway, so Lennon starts it pinched in. He's standing right next to, in this case, it's not Cobb anymore because it's Hernandez. Okay? So now, they slowly, he chooses not to play it. He goes back to the center back. They go across. And then they go all the way to the other side. It's a really slow. This is not like a boom, one touch across, right? Take forever, right? By that time, if you're Wiley sitting on the left back, you got to be drooling, right? Like, look, they're close. You can see the whole thing. They're switching, right? They're like, I dare you to play that guy because I'm going to counter. I'm going to step, whatever. He never moves from standing right next to Abram. Never.
Holding his hand.
He's holding his hand the whole time. He leaves him out even as he watches them clearly go to the center back, into the middle, switch it. Why, right?
And so this goes back to one of the Twitter conversations we were having with one of the youth coaches here in Atlanta around there's a time to be back and in to I'm not saying you don't want to be back and in to a degree, so you can read, you need to be able to read the game and then read it and react. And that's where our point of view is on there's over pinching is definitely more of an issue at high-level soccer where you need backing in, but then you need to, as you were describing with Wiley, read the situation, then get out wide.
Yeah, so Wiley should have been out there. It should have been easy. Okay, he's not. So they play DeAndre Yedlin, right? And he never goes at Wiley. He just stands there in front of them. He looks up, and he decides to serve a ball into the middle, okay? Now, serve the ball into the middle, you're like, oh, good. We've got Lennon who's pinching in. He's right there. And it turns out if you look at the start of the play, Hernandez and Lennon are standing there 2v2.
Yeah.
Okay, they have two guys running. Okay, so both of the Cincinnati players go for the ball. You know what Lennon does?
Do tell.
He looks at Hernandez, his center back, and says, oh, that's your run. And he allows the two players to go. So Hernandez goes with the near guy, as he should, right? And it's a little bit over both of their heads. So Hernandez turns around and is like, well, I got Lennon pinched in. Lennon never moves, and it lands right on Lucho's foot. He takes it, and he scores. So if you're going to pinch Lennon in, don't you think he should have been marking Lucho? Why would you pinch in if you're not going to defend?
Again.
I mean, it is the most crazy shambolic version because, first of all, we gave them an on the near side an open ball, which they should never have. Second of all, once they switch it, Wiley never goes and addresses it. He could have won the ball. And then they switch it back to right into Pineda's system. They play right into the perfect system where he's left the outside back, Lennon pinched in. But Lennon doesn't even bother to defend because he's like, oh, that's not my job.
And it didn't end up in a goal, but earlier on in the game, the 56th minute, there's an example of Lennon pinching in. If you guys want to go back on Apple TV, if you subscribe, watch the game, watch in the 56th minute, Lennon pinching in.
We go may back even to have this, to do this to clip on the next podcast because it is the essence of You know, because he finally, Pineda has finally got the whole thing sorted out in the middle. It's awesome. And you can see it on that play. They have nowhere to go with this ball. We are super marked up in the middle. Uh-huh. And the only thing that allows them to score is absolutely idiotic pinching in for no reason.
All right. So, Dave, we are a quarter of the way into the season. Is there anything else you want to talk about on the Cincinnati game, or is that pretty much the
crux? No, I think Cincinnati is the crux. I want to say a couple of things about just more globally about the team on the quarter of a season.
Let's get into that. So,
I mean, I guess the only other thing you might say is, you know, is Cobb going out in the halftime the difference in that game? You know, would Cobb maybe make the play?
Maybe. He's been playing.
He's better.
Yeah. I mean, he's been okay.
I think in that game it may have made the difference because he's been playing.
Really?
He's been playing very good 1v1 defense.
Okay. Well, very good.
In which we're missing a little of that.
And I will say, here's my mea culpa. So I predicted a win because I said, look, our defensive midfield is so much better. We're not going to give up two goals anymore. And Mikey Dobbs said to me before the game, credit to Mikey Dobbs, he said, yeah, but we still got Pineda. Right? And I was like, well, what do you mean? He's already got it sorted out in the midfield. How's that possible? And he's like, well, he'll find a way, right? And he was 100% right, which is because that's a perfect example. We had it so sorted out in the midfield, they couldn't go where they were supposed to go. But because we had the stupid pinching in, we still gave up a goal.
And the missed opportunity to change your triple sub right after you score.
Yes.
Sometimes it takes a bold decision to be like, you know what, Fortune, you're not going in. Dax, jump, or just hold off.
Or let me give me a second to reevaluate.
Give me a second to reevaluate. Exactly. Yeah.
And if you're out there from Atlanta United and you're listening, please go watch that clip again and go find Pineda and say, why, dear Lord, why? Because it's just so crazy.
Now, right. Y'all were there. How was the reaction to Miles Robinson coming back? Did everyone love him?
You know, there was a big cheer when he got announced.
Big cheer when he announced, but that was about it.
That's it?
That was it.
Okay.
It was the we didn't over cheer him.
I want to say one thing about Miles Robinson, because there's some criticism, particularly from the U.S. national team perspective, that, oh, he's not good enough, he's an MLS defender, blah, blah, blah. And mostly the criticism is, oh, he can't build out of the back, he can't split the lines when he's coming out of the back, et cetera, et cetera. And I would counter that with, okay, maybe. I think he can do that better than people think. But the bottom line is, you guys are idiots because your center back, the first thing you want them to do is defend. Yeah.
Defend.
And Mascara in the second half gets a ball and is gone. Like, I mean, he is off to goal.
Uh-huh.
And Miles Robinson catches him from behind and wins the ball. And I'm like, that is why you want him as your center back.
Okay.
Because that is not something you can teach. Yeah. That is something that's going to win you the World Cup, right?
Okay.
Forget splitting the lines. Let's go defend.
All right.
So he was, I thought, really brilliant.
So we're quarter way through the season, and we're in seventh place for, you know, a team that has one of the biggest fan bases in all of Major League Soccer. So hot in 2018, coming off of the championship. Great roster. We have a roster that, by all accounts, is equal to, if not some degree, maybe even more potential from the Martinez-Almiron duo that we had. We've got Gigi, Almada, who in my mind are equal talents to those two. And then I think, to some degree, the pieces around are just as strong as what we had in 2018. So we have a MLS Cup winning roster right now, so a lot of credit to some of the signings.
Yeah, Lagerwey, don't know whether he's really responsible.
Well,
there's
still questions. Yeah, so is it,
anyway.
People say Lagerwey all the time because no one wants to give.
But the signings we've had has been terrific. Bocanegra, Lagerwey, whoever it is, has done well.
But yeah, who is it? I mean, our technical director to find talent is not Garth Lagerwey.
Yep.
It's Bocanegra.
I agree.
So he's the one that went out and found Schlees, no? Or, I mean, is Garth out on the road doing this stuff? Like, I mean, if anyone knows, keep me honest on this, but I'm trying to give Boca credit where credit's due.
Yeah.
Because he failed on Derek Etienne, who's no longer with the team. Thank goodness for a little bit of GAM.
How did we get that much GAM for him?
How much did we get? If I was Tehran,
it was like almost 400,000 in 370.
Etienne?
Yes.
What?
LA Galaxy signed Miguel Berry for 2 years, if you recall.
I mean,
so. I'm just saying that, there's all these people out there because of the Falcons' current draft picks are a little bit down about, and they're like, oh, Arthur Blank doesn't run on a team, blah, 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 blah. Well, somehow, Arthur's also running Atlanta United, and they made the greatest swindle of all time by getting $375 for Derek Etienne.
I think more than anything, that opens up a little bit of roster room. Yep.
I mean, that is a brilliant roster move.
Apparently, we probably only get like 25% of that game the way it works out because of other things that I don't understand.
There's a percentage of game?
No, it has to do with...
Now you really lost me.
I don't know, man. I've read about it, but all right. I can't keep up with
it. I don't even know what GAM is.
General allocation money.
I want to say something about being a quarter through the season and maybe looking back at the Pineda era, you know, because there was an article about their tactics on the Scarves and Stripes, and a lot of it was stuff that we agree with, you know, about whether Pineda is really good enough. Here's a question I'm going to throw out to you. The other aspect that we have not talked about in coaching, which is a big deal, right, is developing players.
Yeah.
So if you think back under the Pineda era, and this in the 100th podcast is a really good time to reflect, how many players under Pineda have gotten better? And how many players have gotten worse?
Ooh.
How do we feel?
So the only player that I would say that I feel like is developing right now that's a younger player is Noah Cobb.
Okay. Concur.
Definitely someone on my radar who has gotten minutes. There's a lot of potential. So if that's, you know, maybe there's some good things happening 1v1 there. Maybe good things are happening. Do I think Wiley's game is developing? Someone the U.S. men's national team obviously believes in? No. I don't think that Pineda has helped progress his game at all.
Yeah. Agree or disagree?
I actually agree with that.
I feel like he would have developed. We're going to do this rapid
18.
Fire.
So, okay,
yeah.
Go.
Yeah.
Keep going.
Agree.
I have nothing else. Like, honestly, is he developing Almada's game, who's a World Cup winning, you know, player that has potential to play one of the best teams in Europe? No. If anything, I think he's holding him back. Gigi's just
now. There was an article. I know we said we'd go rapid fire, but there was an article talking about how Almada is now suddenly pressuring more. How do you feel about that? So statistically, he's getting more pressures on the ball. Well, that's Pineda's responsible for that. Is he doing that?
Well, no. Statistically, he is due to what we talked about at the beginning of the podcast. We're really excited about, which is for the first time we've seen Muyamba and Schlees applying pressure. And
that's it.
Muyamba is on Acosta in that Cincinnati game,
ding.
And then Schlees is reading, putting pressure. That makes it so much easier for Almada to be a little bit of a pest.
Somebody should put a straitjacket.
Yeah. Oh no!
Boom shakalaka.
That's the one.
There it is.
Yeah. Sorry, I'm not the right.
I mean, of course, Almada.
This one.
Boom shakalaka.
Almada's going to be able to take advantage of that all day. I mean, that's always been in his bag. That's not something that evolved. That is evolved because...
It's actually interesting to me because...
What's happening behind
it? When Almada first came, I felt like he had that. He was chasing back all over the place. And then I felt like people were like, oh, it disappeared. It disappeared because he got so frustrated. If you chase and chase and chase and watch them find the open pass to the open guy, you're like,
you can't do that.
Are you kidding me?
Right.
And exactly. I think he finally is like, oh, they're covered again. Now I can chase again. And he's back to it. So that's my feeling about that.
Yeah.
I think Almada came with that. Maybe he lost it for a little while. And maybe you could argue Pineda's doing something to say, hey, maybe we have it marked up. You can go do it again.
Right.
Right. But that's about it.
So, yeah, as far as like going back to developing players, right? So then has he developed Almada? We just said no, we don't think so. Gigi's kind of, you don't need to develop him.
Gigi's fully formed.
So then you got
maybe out of the womb.
So that, I'm also disappointed with how, like, I think there's a good chance for him to 1v1 the way that Saba can use his unique talents more effectively. And I think Cincinnati game is a perfect example. Like, I would be sitting down with Saba after that game and being like, look, you did so much right and you did so much wrong. he got into so many good positions, but then didn't make some final decisions that weren't as crisp. And it's like it's more about encouragement. And so
encouraging,
he didn't do anything wrong. He just missed a couple opportunities to do a little bit more right at the end of plays. And I don't know that Pineda does a great job of identifying that and figuring out a way to sit down with a player like Saba on 1v1 development of a player and make him better. I mean, maybe I'm wrong.
So but here's I'm not the question. So has there any player? I mean, Cobb, you're talking about he's played, like, what, two, three professional games? So I wouldn't say that you're reaching, yeah. Is there any player you think has gotten better?
No.
Well, he's brought along, and you say, look, that's the guy he developed, and he made him great.
No, I can't think of anybody.
I have one.
You got one?
Maybe.
You got
one? Okay.
Maybe. Maybe Lennon? I mean, certainly attacking-wise, yeah. Now he's underlapping.
He is underlapping,
and
yes.
That's made him a he's gotten into some dangerous spots.
I think that's, I mean, this
his
is the
decision making's better.
Certainly the best I've seen Lennon play in the last 4 years is this year. You know, I like the way that he's, but is that more of a situation of, again, maybe him getting the tactics right, but is that really development of a player?
Well, you're going to give him credit, that's the guy.
But that's the only one, possibly.
He stopped the airplanes. So Lennon's looking better because when he's receiving it, he's coming from more of a on the front foot running into the space, which I'll still give Pineda credit for.
Yeah.
He's corrected part of that, but I don't
although consider, we've been saying it for 2 years.
I don't consider that development.
Pineda
of a player.
Did it in the last 3 weeks.
Mm.
I'm like, so I'm looking at it and I'm like, you know, I mean, all these people, even going back to, you know, Barco, and you go back to Araujo, and you go back to the guy who just got married.
So, again, we're seventh place.
Has anybody gotten better?
No.
Doesn't seem like it.
I mean, the center backs you talk about, right? You know, we had Parata. No.
I mean, Abram has gotten worse.
No.
Wolf is. So let's talk about who's gotten worse.
Wolf. That's
seems
a great
to
point.
Be not getting better.
Abram has gotten worse because he hasn't given minutes. We don't know who Cohen even is, right? He's our next generation goalkeeper. He should be somebody who should be rotated in so we know at least what we got against a weaker side. And granted, like we've had a tough schedule. We played really good.
I was
good
talking about Marcelino Moreno before.
Yeah.
There it is.
Yeah,
you're right.
Yeah, I'm like, you know, the other judge of a play, you know, a coach, if he's going to have a long-term success, you're like, okay, they sign great players. And then the other thing you do is you take the players you have and make them better.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like.
Yeah, Wolf's not getting better.
No, not at all.
Nobody is.
Yeah.
So
is Mascara getting better, especially on that left side? Did we finally
Mascara showed back up and got better.
He has gotten better. I don't know if it's Pineda, but he has gotten better.
But when he came back, he was better from a different club.
Yeah, exactly. And we finally give him a start. He plays not on the right side where we've seen him. He plays on the left side. And he played some of the worst crosses I've ever seen.
Yes. His decision making went right. Starting versus sub, like in the decision making?
He did have one good cross.
You would think.
But no.
He did have one good
and
cross.
And the one that he created where he made an absolute horrible decision, made a horrible ball, and the guy happened to head it right back to Saba. Right?
That was not a great decision.
So do we want to talk about the upcoming game this evening in Chicago? Who we think will be in the starting
predictions,
lineup.
Predictions, is it a must-win?
So it sounds like Gregerson is questionable, which means it will probably start on, he'll be on the bench is what my guess is.
Yeah.
Okay.
But for a center back, that doesn't help much.
We might see him. Yeah, exactly. It doesn't help much. It sounds like Silva's out this game.
Okay.
So we won't see Silva tonight, which means we'll see what Wolf or Mascara.
Are we going to see Gigi?
Probably.
He didn't look that great. When he came back, he was, you know, had a... The whole warm-up, he had the bandage on the knee, and then he wasn't moving that well.
He didn't look that great.
Game.
But he's had a week. He's had a week, so
he's
maybe.
He's had a week. I think we absolutely see Gigi. Yeah. I think Pineda knows he's under pressure in this game to get. I mean
that's
I feel
never
like
a
this
good
is
reason to start or not.
Yeah,
play.
But I feel like this is a must-win. Did you just ask if it's a must-win? I think, I mean, going into all these people being gone, we need to beat the teams were better than, even on the road.
So let's start there, right? So we're going to Chicago tonight. Chicago, by all accounts, after watching them, were an abysmal. I mean, they're a bad team.
They were not good when they came.
Now, granted, they may not have had all their starters in that game, that home game that we played them a few weeks ago.
They're in 13th.
They're in 13th. You know our old friend
with two wins, Andrew Gutman, and three draws and four losses.
Yeah. He's on Chicago. Yeah. I didn't know that.
He keeps getting shipped around.
Oh, bummer. Okay,
yeah, Gutman's
no longer on Colorado. I thought maybe they would be better, right, this year because the defensive midfielder who they picked up from the national team was pretty good. Acosta, is the other Acosta, not anyway. But they haven't been much better.
They were not playing good soccer in the Benz when we played them. So
no,
you know, I feel like this is a game that Atlanta United should absolutely go in with the talent that we know we have available, regardless of where they have Gregerson to start, regardless of where they have Gigi to start. We need to go in there and get 3 points. Anything less is an indication that, you know, we're not able to find those moments and windows where you have to get those results if you're going to be compete in the MLS. Does it mean we need to win all those in every situation? No, but, like, this is a moment where you kind of have to find those points, especially after you let 5 of them go in our 2 home games in the last series.
Yeah, and if I were doing it, he's not going to do it. I would actually – so normally I would have played for the tough matches with 3 in the midfield with Dax McCarty taking off one of the attacking forwards. You know, from our previous podcast, we talk a lot about that. Normally I would not do that against a weaker team like Chicago, but I would in this game. I would say, look, I am not giving up any goals, and I'm going to assume that they're bad enough. We're going to score 1 or 2, and if we just dominate the game, let's just go win 1-0 ugly, get ourselves back on the
So from the get-go, you're playing that way. Okay.
Yep, I would. He won't do it. But I think, you know, it's an emergency situation. And so there you've got to control the game even more.
So, again, you're saying instead of putting in, like, a mascara for Silva, you're saying put in Dax as the extra defensive midfielder.
Yes. Now, granted, I would have hopefully had the team being much more confident and doing well, and then I would never go to Chicago and do that. I'd be like, good, go to Chicago, let's go roll over them.
And with that theory, right, you got Moyamba, Schlees, and Dax in the center, and then really your attackers are Almada, Gigi, and Saba.
Yep.
That seems like enough. To find that moment.
The goal behind that would be to overcome our terrible pinching in and a couple of the crazy other things that we do, that we give up cheap goals because we just keep them in their end the whole time. That's the only thing and that's a problem. So I have been arguing that we were Formula Plus. I'm here to say I was wrong. We have not been Formula Plus. We've been absolutely Formula, right? Because we've had 2 tough games at home, Philadelphia and Cincinnati, and the formula would have said that you get mostly a tie, and if they're really good teams at home, you sometimes lose, and that's exactly what's happened. You would say on the road, right, against good teams, you never win. That's exactly what happened, right? We have been formula, and I'm sad to say that because I feel like fixing it in the middle should have done most of it, but we're still doing this stupid things to how do you dominate a game like we have in the last 2 games and get a loss and a tie? That is just
again
awful.
You put in a young player like Fortune, who I think has got a lot of potential, but that was the wrong sub again after Almada scored in that Cincinnati game.
I would have left Muyamba on and added a defensive midfielder first of all, and I would have gone with Dax McCarty the veteran instead of Fortune. If you're gonna kill a game, you've got one of the best kill-the-game players in the history of MLS, and he refuses to play him.
Yeah, and you know, I mean, kind of an injured Gigi coming back on, like, he's going to have 1 or 2 breakaway opportunities. He can do it by himself in those situations.
Yeah.
So what else are we going to talk about?
I think that
What's your prediction?
Predictions. I am going to go a depressing tie.
You're going to throw it on me.
I'll say if you want me to go first.
Yeah, go first. I've been flip-flopping.
I'm going to go with tie. We're back formula. Formula says a terrible team on the road is a tie.
So, man, I feel like Chicago is so bad.
They are bad.
They're so bad.
Here comes the optimism. I feel
it. We're going to get a win.
Okay. Very good.
I think we're going to get
a win. Done with the outfit. So I had it the last 2 weeks, and I really thought the midfield was dead.
It's
Kellen Acosta who's their defensive midfielder.
Okay. Well, I hope. I mean, we need a win. I feel like we have to win.
But again,
we gotta be a better team.
The reason it's going to keep dragging us down this purgatory of Pineda, too, I believe, in the purgatory of Pineda as well. That's just kind of, that's the roller coaster we're going to be on for a long time. Until 2000. I think he's going to be the coach throughout this year, and we're going to end up in now maybe fifth or sixth place at the end of the year.
Especially with now losing Almada, who has said that he wants to play in both Copa and the Olympics, and losing Sleaze to the European Championships. Ugh. We're done. Once you lose Sleaze, we're no longer have any chance to go Formula Plus.
No.
Period. Because it's not actually the tactics that's changing so much. It's mostly just Sleaze.
Isn't that crazy? That we're talking about Sleaze over. Almada's going to be gone forever, but we're like, Sleaze.
I said that from the beginning. If we were going to be good, it was all going to be Sleaze. And he has been magnificent. And Pineda is wasting it. All right, shall we?
Yes.
I feel like back in Guadalajara. You say it? I do it, coach. Football is life.
Thanks for listening, everybody.
Happy 100, guys.
Happy 100 podcast. All you folks here at Wild Heaven, if you're interested in Lenny and I podcast or have any friends, it's ETL on fire. Thanks for listening.
Thank you.
Bye, guys.